5.
This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This afternoon, Superintendent Jared Corden of Roseburg Public Schools, we're going to talk about a state assessment report looking at the pandemic, its impacts on education. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you.
You think we're going to get through all this in 20 minutes? Probably not.
See if we can keep viewers awake and attentive in their cars.
Well, there is so much in this state information. I guess at the front end, kind of give us a summary of what the Oregon Department of Education report said.
Well, I guess if we look at this holistically and broadly, it's not surprisingly, the standardized assessment results dipped pretty consistently statewide. There's a lot of ground to make up following the last 2 years of disruptions to primarily in-person learning. There's a host of conclusions we can draw from these results, but what they really show me is that in-person learning is really critical for most students, as are the relationships that teachers develop with kids and their families to help track that growth. It's probably important for people, as they see snippets of this data, to have a little more information about what they actually mean. The results that were released a few weeks ago are in part comparative data sets from the 2018-19 school year and then the 19-22 school year. So it's not longitudinal cohort data, meaning the data doesn't tell us how a student, for example, in fifth grade did in 2018-19 and 22 into 21 and 22. So there's a pretty significant gap in this data. It tells us something for sure, but like the Brits say, kind of mind the gap.
So, I was talking to somebody in the last few days, and they were talking about their kids, who I don't know, but talking about their experience in getting through it. One kid really excelled at in 20 when it was simply online, once some of the clunky elements got figured out, and really liked it, did really well. Another student who had been, probably almost an honor student or maybe was an honor student, was trying to figure out how to navigate these small sessions in Zoom and just not doing well with it at all. And now this year, happy to be back, more like normal, but, certainly a gap in that period of time and feeling like they've got a lot of catching up to do.
Yeah, we've seen that. I think, we did the best we could do. We tried to stay in person the best we could, but there were quite a few disruptions. It is great to have kids back, and our kids are doing remarkably well. The state assessment data is interesting. It definitely tells us some things. But what I can say is that having kids back and seeing their performance now, there's been some marked differences in that.
So locally, how does the data compare with the numbers from the state?
Yeah, our district and our schools were certainly not immune to drops in test scores either. So we've had some bumps in those. Again, these state assessments are kind of a one-shot snapshot on that day of how a kid did. And so it certainly doesn't tell us the total picture of how a student's doing, but we definitely had some drops. We had been building supports in for kids before the pandemic, actually, and we've continued to build supports, throughout the pandemic. Example of that would be our ninth grade on track programs that we had at the high school. Those probably contributed pretty significantly to the graduation rate in 2021 for us. So, We saw dips. We saw those actually during the pandemic. We weren't completely surprised by this data either. So we've been planning for those to make sure we can get kids where they need to get.
Now, what grades were tested? Was it everybody or just specific grades?
Yeah, so state assessment, this has been the case for, previous to the pandemic for several years. So we had English language arts and mathematics assessments and then science. And so with English and math, those are for grades 3 through 8th grade and also 11th grade. In science, it is our 5th, 8th, and 11th graders.
And so as you go through that, as you've looked at it, was it much different than you expected?
It wasn't different than I expected. And again, this report's interesting because it does tell us something about all students, but the report is primarily driven around kind of cohorts of students in terms of we can look at students, for example, that are second language learners, students who are economically disadvantaged, students, Hispanic students, male students. It was predictably what I expected to see post-pandemic, and feel good about some of the supports we had in place even during the pandemic to support that.
So as you look at, you know, where we are now, are you concerned about long-term impacts for the kids that went through school in the last couple of years and maybe never even really catching up?
I'm not concerned about never catching up. We certainly have, there were impacts for COVID that are undeniable in terms of the experience kids had. I mean, we saw more dysregulation. We saw student behaviors increase. There were some of those things that we certainly saw. But, I it's interesting. I was just looking at some of the fall sports, OSAA sports at the high school. We had one of our highest combined GPAs for fall sports, for OSAA sports this fall, 3.67. You know, we had, for example, girls cross country was a 3.97 GPA. Ladies soccer was a 3.85 GPA. So that combined tells me kids are actively getting back to doing those extracurricular athletics activities and also leaning into the classroom. So I think if we can just continue to provide those kids the support they need and structure, we'll be okay.
Now, when you talk about the fall sports now and GPAs, are those their GPAs from last spring then, since we've just started?
Yeah, those are from this current school year. So in terms of when we started early August to now, so I see kids doing better academically now than they did in the previous year.
And do you see anything with socialization or some kids having trouble getting back into sort of the normal school day?
I mean, there's always, I think, in a school district our size of, 5,000-6,000 kids, there's always kids that are working toward that. I think this year we've had a little bit more than a traditional school year, but really the year's been, we've had a great start. I think it's felt more like a year in the past before COVID, that kids enjoy and parents do that structure of just having things be more predictable for them.
There was funding that came from the federal and state levels to help with a lot of things, some extra things this summer. And of course, that meant some, getting those staffed and et cetera. Do you feel like those in the long term might be something that needs to continue?
Well, yeah. So this is, it's grant funding. So we have to be careful about how you apply that grant funding, because the dilemma is anytime you rely on grant funding, that's problematic long term. Otherwise, you have this cliff there. So I think it's been helpful in many ways to take care of some of the logistical challenges of the pandemic, for example, providing hardware and software for kids, make sure they have Chromebooks or whatever the technology they have. I think it's been helpful for us, but we are not reliant on it in terms of that we haven't structured our budgetary constraints to be reliant on it. It is grant funding. Additional funding, if it comes in, we'll certainly find a way to use, but we've tried to be smart about how we apply that funding so we don't have a cliff. In other words, we haven't bought a lot of, we haven't purchased a lot of staff without those funds, because unless you have a lot of attrition and a lot of hiring, you wouldn't be able to hire those folks back.
Where you've got something, you go, oh, this is going great, and then you get next year's funding level, and wait a minute, we can't do that anymore.
Yeah, that's right. We've tried to take a look at what's getting us the best academic return on investment and make sure those things are funded out of our state school fund, which is the stream of money that comes from the state to do school, and avoid some of the ESSER funding or the COVID funding, if people will, for some of those one-time purchases we need because of COVID.
Now, one of the things I've heard a lot lately from parents is the idea that they felt the summer programs were really helpful. Their kids got into learning maybe in a different way. And because kids are behind, one of the things that has been brought up is there a way to continue these summer programs until you can look at scores and go, okay, we have we've mitigated what happened between 20 and 22.
Yeah, we've been really grateful for that appropriation of funds. Again, it's you know, we've had summer programs before. This has been able to have us really enhance those for all students. They are by invitation. We do extend some special invitations if we see a kiddo that maybe could use a little more support, say in math, for example. But they're optional. They're invitational. I think our hope is always that kids in the summer find something that sparks their interest, something that they can, you know, be creative with and think through and learn and read and develop themselves over the summer. But having the kind of programs we've had that focus on both academics and enrichment have been really good for our kids.
More when we come back. Superintendent Jared Corden of Roseburg Public Schools, the interview, a podcast at 541radio.com, 1246 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1248, Lars Larson coming at 1. Your Q this afternoon, part of KQEN Local Talk at 4. Tomorrow, we're going to deep dive into Douglas County and specifically Roseburg history. Dale Greenlee, the Vice President of the Douglas County Historical Society. He was very involved in the party in the park last Sunday and some of the things that are going to be going on this year as Roseburg celebrates its 150th birthday. So as a history expert, we're going to find out more from him about Roseburg's history on tomorrow's program. Superintendent Jared Corden in now to talk about test scores and things related to education coming through this side of the pandemic. What about, you know, this report talks about test scores, how the kids have done. A lot of people have opinions and all that. But what about the impact of the pandemic on educators and other school staff?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, our educators, I'm in our schools often. I try to get into schools every day if I can. And I see a lot of excited educators just to have our kids back. They are happy kids are back, happy that we're back in person. But I think in some ways, they're probably also still kind of recovering from that pandemic. It was a bit of a shift for them. It was a heavy load to lift, hard to keep everybody happy with managing these state mandates and things were shifting left and right during the pandemic. I mentioned before too, I think they, you know, some of our educators are also still dealing with those impacts in the classroom of what that means in terms of just some dysregulation or behavior. And I think they're doing a good job with that. But I think that they are excited to be back, happy to be back, and happy this is hopefully in our rearview mirror.
A lot of educators that I know, both here and other places, there were folks that were at a comfortable financial situation. They could technically retire, weren't planning on it, but as things went on, they're like, okay, I'm done. And there was definitely some of that nationwide, mm-hmm. people pulling out. In Roseburg's case, some of the folks who, especially in 20 and into 21, you were needing additional staff going back to try to essentially coax people out of retirement in the short term and help out because there were so many different things to do, especially during that time where you were had some schools in person and some that were still more online.
Yeah, I think it's like any organization, you're trying to make sure you can keep talent, retain talent, and sometimes pick the phone up and say, hey, I've got an opportunity for you. Let's sit down and have a conversation about it. I think a lot of things have stabilized, but we're still seeing impacts, going back to impacts on educators. We still have had, we're still short-staffed. We're not fully staffed yet. We may not be fully staffed this year. We have, I think last I checked, 28 of our classified positions are still unfilled. And we're competing with everybody else for talent around town. And we've had some, that's impacted the way subs happen. And we've had more sub shortages again. So a lot of that is we need staff picking up those classes that are currently there. It does put an extra burden on staff. So I think we've still seen some of that. I guess we could probably call it pandemic related. It might just be, the typical season where people are getting sick with, the common colds and viruses that are going around. But our staff's doing well, but we're still not back to where we were staffing-wise, and that has impacts as well.
Do you think for the classified positions and some of those folks, I mean, do you have people looking at, do I do this or do I go make $2 or $3 an hour more at a box store at a job that I can just do and then walk away from at night?
I hear this a lot from employees who are saying, we just don't, you're just not paying what I need. There's not a living wage. And a lot of our jobs, the way we kind of work with our staff is through a collective bargaining process. And we have a collective bargaining agreement that we signed about a year and a half ago that had a COLA raise of 4%, 3%, 2% over 3 years. And that certainly hasn't kept up with inflation. And I've had people just tell me there's not, I don't want to go somewhere else, but I can make $2 or $3 an hour more with less responsibility or more hours.
And with some of the other things going on, one of the things I want to ask you about too is we've heard about, of course, the Uvalde situation. There's a lot of discussion there on a lot of different levels. But you brought up something that I actually hadn't heard about. Maybe you can explain what swatting is.
Yeah, that's this is problematic. It's good for our listeners and community to know about this. But we have seen, I think swatting's been around for a while, which is essentially where someone makes a hoax or a prank 911 call. And they make a false report to some emergency services, typically involving something of a nature that, you know, hostages, gunfire, some active threat, in order to get the SWAT team dispatched. We've seen an increase across the country in these quote-unquote swatting attacks in our schools. And I think post Uvalde, this has actually created another level of confusion. These attacks are kind of taking advantage of preying on people that are increasingly worried about safety in schools, but also that maybe law enforcement wouldn't act. And sometimes we've had a couple instances across the country where, you know, parents get to a school, even see law enforcement where there is no active threat. Parents assuming that, you know, police aren't doing anything, and then they try to intervene themselves. So what I can say is we work real closely with our law enforcement partners. We have a great relationship with all of them, the PD, Sheriff's Office, State Police, and others. I'm confident in their ability to respond and also in our ability to communicate in a way to parents that won't be on social media. This is not something that's going to come out on Facebook. If people see this on Facebook, that's not where we will put this at. If they see it on Twitter, that's not where it'll be. But we'll work through our own communication means that we normally do. And I do think this is something the community needs to be aware of, because it is highly disruptive to families. It's emotional to families that they hear about this. These are coming. We're seeing more of these across the country, and it's an emotional disruption for our kids and families.
It seems like sometimes people will hear about something. Maybe one person hears something on the police scanner if they happen to listen to it, but if they're not a professional, they don't always know exactly what that means. And then they start sending out messages to folks, and it doesn't take long to get a whole bunch of people riled up and not actually know what's going on.
Yeah, and this is such emotion in this with our community relative to our kids. We've seen some really horrible incidents, continue to see these across our country and the world, where unfortunately our kids are in the middle of a situation where, you know, there's violence. And so people respond pretty aggressively, including parents, to this, as they should. And so I think it's good for people to know about this. It's despicable, in my opinion, but it's good to know this is a trend that's been happening. In the event that it does happen, I think it's know that law enforcement will respond, and know that, you know, say our school district won't put something out on Facebook about this. So
about 30 seconds left. What's the school board response been to these test score results?
I mean, the school board has been great. I mean, they're completely on board with ensuring that, you know, the district is focused on student success and well-being. Just worked through a process where they adopted a STRAT plan that really is focused on care and support and instruction for kids. So I really appreciate their support in this.
All right, Superintendent Jared Corden, Roseburg Public Schools, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
12:50.
Listening to Inside. Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEM. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEM.